So I want you to imagine the Netherlands in the 16th century. You have these traditional hand sawyers, and their entire livelihood, I mean, their whole identity revolves around this back-breaking manual labor, just cutting massive timber by hand.
Right.
And then suddenly, out on the horizon, these towering structures start popping up, wind-powered sawmills.
Oh man, yeah. Because to a hand sawyer, that doesn't look like technological progress at all. It looks like, the sudden and catastrophic end of their entire world.
Exactly. It looks like obsolescence. They were completely terrified. But the historical twist here is that those windmills, they didn't actually destroy work. They turned the Netherlands into this massive global seafaring powerhouse. And the mills ended up creating entirely new, really demanding professions that just didn't exist a generation prior. And, that historical pivot is exactly where we find ourselves today.
It really is.
So for today's deep dive, we are unpacking A Manifesto by Rob van Linde. He's a Dutch expert who has basically spent the last 20 years in the trenches of corporate transformation. And he argues that we are currently staring at our own wind-powered sawmills, which is agentic AI.
Yeah, and it's a crucial comparison because we are watching history repeat itself in real time right now, but obviously with significantly higher stakes.
Oh, for sure.
Linda has charted this two-decade journey through the engine room of modern business. He's watched four distinct waves roll through. You have the agile movement, then the push for digitalization, the shock of generative AI, and now, like you said, the rise of agentic AI. And he's distilled the failures and the successes of all those eras into a series of practical frameworks across a few different books.
And the overarching pattern he observes over those 20 years is just incredibly stark. I mean, companies consistently buy the newest technology, they completely ignore the human culture required to wield it, and then they just stand around baffled when the whole transformation fails.
Yeah, they really do. And the numbers he cites from the current landscape are just alarming. Here we are in 2026, and major tech conglomerates are firing tens of thousands of employees in the name of AI productivity. Yet the hard data shows that only 2% of AI initiatives are actually delivering genuine, measurable business value.
2%. That is wild.
I mean, that means 98% of these massive overhauls are either just stalling out or they're actively damaging the company. Organizations are discarding decades of deep, tacit human knowledge just to fund these deployments. And they're unleashing unprotected AI systems onto chaotic internal data structures. Throwing advanced technology at a fundamentally broken organizational system, it just doesn't fix the system. It accelerates the chaos. It builds what he calls an unmanageable time bomb.
Okay, so that means if an organization or, even an individual professional wants to survive this agentic AI wave, they have to fix the foundation first. And according to the source material, you really can't fix the foundation without understanding why the last massive wave of transformation failed so spectacularly. We have to look at what he calls the agility charade.
Yeah, the agility charade. Because the agile movement of the early 2000s, it held massive promise, right? It was designed to shatter rigid corporate hierarchies and give autonomy back to the workers.
That was the whole pitch.
Exactly. But over two decades, it mutated. Instead of freedom, agile implementations often just resulted in dense bureaucracy. You had frameworks like SAFe, the scaled agile framework, being introduced, and suddenly agility just meant this endless series of mandatory meetings and micromanagement.
Just dressed up in the language of a sprint.
Yes, exactly.
You see this constantly in software development. People's calendars are essentially just brick walls of daily stand-ups and retrospective meetings. It reminds me a bit of the physics of baking.
Oh, how so?
Well, if you are trying to bake a really complex cake, the oven requires a sustained, uninterrupted environment of heat, right?
Good.
But if you have five different project managers making you open the oven door every 10 minutes to give a status update on how the cake is doing, well, the cake falls flat. It never gets the uninterrupted focus it actually requires to rise.
I love that. And you lose the momentum entirely. The cognitive load of constant context switching just destroys deep work. And that mechanical failure is exactly what Van Linde's first practical pillar is designed to solve. He calls it Flow OS.
Grow OS.
Yeah, so the operating system of a company has to prioritize people before processes. If a transformation framework doesn't mechanically free up time and cognitive capacity, the workforce will inevitably reject it.
So, how does Flow OS actually keep that oven door closed? Like, how does it physically restructure the work week to protect that cognitive capacity?
Well, it relies on integrating three distinct methodologies. And not just as buzzwords, but as actual structural filters. So first, you implement design thinking at the very beginning of the pipeline. This acts as a strict discovery gate, and it's built on empathy. It ensures the team is actually solving a real user problem before a single line of code is written or project is even funded, so it just kills busy work right at the root.
That makes a ton of sense.
And then second, you use OKRs, so objectives and key results, to provide strategic purpose. This aligns the entire organization so everyone understands the overarching goal.
Which, I guess, eliminates the need for managers to constantly check in on direction.
Precisely. And then the third piece is Kanban, which visualizes the workflow.
Right, Kanban.
Yeah, Kanban provides absolute visibility into where a task is in the pipeline and, importantly, where the bottlenecks are forming. So when you have total visibility through Kanban and total alignment through OKRs, you don't need 5 daily stand-up meetings.
Ah, I see.
You transition the mechanics of the office. You move away from those frantic 2-week sprints and those daily coffee clutch updates. Instead, you shift to 4-week cycles with just one weekly focus sync.
Wow, just one.
Yeah, just one. You build a structural shield around the employee's time so they can actually do the deep work.
Okay, let's unpack this a bit, because FlowOS fixes the mechanical problem of time, which is huge, but time alone doesn't really solve the integration of artificial intelligence, does it?
No, it doesn't.
Because if you give a workforce uninterrupted time, but they are just absolutely terrified that the AI tool they're being asked to use is going to render their profession obsolete, I mean, they will still sabotage or reject the technology. So protecting time is really only half the battle.
Yeah, you hit the nail on the head. The transition from protecting time to protecting identity is where most companies completely drop the ball. Once you have FlowOS running, you have to engineer the culture.
Okay.
And that brings us to Van Linde's second framework, which is org DNA. This is essentially the blueprint for a human AI organization, and it starts with what he terms a cognitive constitution.
Okay, so the phrase cognitive constitution, it sounds very profound, but I kind of have to push back on the logic here a little bit.
Sure, go ahead.
Well, a constitution is ultimately just words on a page, right? Like, if I'm a data analyst and my company rolls out a massive, totally opaque neural network that can do my daily tasks in 3 seconds, reading a corporate values charter isn't going to stop my anxiety. So how does a constitution actually solve the fear of a black box algorithm?
That is the exact friction point this framework addresses, actually. The constitution isn't just some motivational poster in the break room. It is a set of binding architectural rules based on 4 key questions. Who are we? What are our non-negotiables? Who decides what? And what do we protect?
Okay.
But to your point about the black box, the psychological threat isn't just about job replacement. It's actually about data alienation.
Data alienation. What do you mean by that?
So think about how a large language model actually processes information. It doesn't read a document the way you or I do. It breaks human language and company knowledge down into vectors and embeddings.
Right, just massive arrays of numbers.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Mapped in high-dimensional space. Now, to a machine, this is highly efficient. But to a human employee who has spent, say, 20 years organizing that data, it looks like a chaotic alien graveyard.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, all the familiar structures are just gone. So the uniformity of AI data processing, it triggers this massive loss of control.
That makes total sense. So the fear isn't just ignorance about the new tech. The fear is a very rational response to losing sovereignty over the environment they used to control.
Precisely. And if management assumes the resistance is just ignorance, you know, their solution is to force employees to hit through a PowerPoint training on how to write prompts.
Right, which helps no one.
Exactly. But if you recognize the resistance is an identity threat driven by data alienation, your solution must be mechanical transparency. And Van Linde solves this with what he calls the data trust card.
Okay, so how does the data trust card restore that sense of control?
It acts as an immutable, visible ledger that's attached to the data pools the AI uses. Because the raw vectors are unreadable to humans, the organization has to establish clear, human-readable provenance.
I see.
The data trust card basically mandates that every data set has visible origins, strict expiry dates, and undeniable access rules.
Oh, that's clever. It's essentially forcing the AI to wear a highly detailed nutrition label. Like, you don't have to understand the actual chemical breakdown of the food, but the label tells you exactly where it came from, what's inside, and when it goes bad.
Yes, that's a perfect analogy. And beyond a label, the org DNA framework demands that you give the employee agency over that data. The text emphasizes 2 concepts here, putting the pen in their hands and letting them visit the cockpit.
Visit the cockpit. I like that.
Yeah, it basically means establishing clear human accountability for the data sets and providing absolute transparency into how the AI is weighing and utilizing that information. When the black box is forced to show its work and respect human-defined boundaries, the panic subsides and curiosity can actually take root.
All right, so we've restructured the workflow to protect their time with FlowOS. And we've reestablished their control over the data through Orge DNA and the data trust card.
Yeah.
Now we have to look at the actual point of contact,
yeah.
The actual moment the human and the agentic AI interact. And the source material argues that the way the corporate world currently manages this interaction is structurally dangerous.
It is a massive vulnerability. For years, the unquestioned gold standard in automation security was this concept called HITL, or human in the loop.
Right, HITL.
And the logic seems sound on the surface.
Yeah.
You know, the AI does the heavy lifting, generates a decision or an action, but a human must review the output and click approve before the action is executed.
The problem with human in the loop, though, is that it completely ignores the reality of human cognition at scale.
Yes.
I mean, if an AI generates one important report a week, a human can totally review it. But agentic AI doesn't generate one report, it generates hundreds of microactions a day. So if you force a human to click approve 400 times a shift, they develop acute approval fatigue.
Which completely neutralizes the security the human was supposed to provide in the first place.
Exactly. It's like the tired bouncer phenomenon. Imagine a bouncer at a wildly popular nightclub.
Okay.
For the first 20 people in line, that bouncer is performing a rigorous security check. They are looking at the hologram on the ID, they're checking the birth date, looking closely at the person's face.
Doing their job.
Right. But by person number 400, it's freezing outside, the line is wrapping around the building, the music is blaring, and the bouncer is just nodding and waving people through without even glancing at the cards. The human has essentially become a blind rubber stamp.
And when your security architecture relies on a rubber stamp, you have zero actual security. You just have the illusion of it. And this is exactly why Van Linde introduces his third major pillar, which is a complete paradigm shift. He calls it human before the loop, or HB4L.
Human before the loop. So you are taking the bouncer away from the door entirely.
You are elevating the human from a reactive bouncer to the architect of the building itself.
Wow, okay.
In the HB4L model, the crucial human work does not happen at the end of the process. It happens before the autonomous agent is ever turned on. The human's job is context design, rights configuration, and building the error architecture.
I think we really need to drill down into the mechanics of this because there is a very common misconception right now about how to control AI.
Oh, absolutely.
A lot of people think that writing a very stern prompt is the same thing as security. They think if they type, "Under no circumstances should you delete the main database," they have secured the system.
Yeah, and that is a fundamental misunderstanding of what a large language model is.
Yeah.
Prompts are absolutely not safety fences. Language models are probabilistic engines, right? They just predict the next most likely token in a sequence.
Right.
They do not understand a request to be ethical or safe in any human sense. Security cannot be a polite request typed into a chat interface. It has to be a deterministic physical barrier in the software code itself.
Which brings us to the actual architecture of HB4L. The framework breaks this down into specific hard-coded layers. Let's look at how they interact. Because it starts with the universal socket, the MCP.
Right, the model context protocol. This is the standardized technical layer that dictates exactly how the AI model plugs into your internal data and your external tools. It has essentially the wiring.
Okay.
But the wiring alone is dangerous, which is why it must be immediately paired with the ACP.
The agentic control protocol. So if the MCP is the socket, the ACP is the surge protector.
That's a great way to put it. It is an incorruptible shield. The ACP is where you hard code the blocking of unauthorized actions.
Right.
If an AI agent, say through a hallucination or a malicious prompt injection, just decides it needs to mass email sensitive client data, the prompt instructions won't stop it.
Right.
But the ACP will physically intercept the API call because that action falls outside the deterministic bounds set by the human architect.
Right.
The AI simply cannot execute a function the ACP does not explicitly permit.
Which fundamentally changes the day-to-day reality of the employee. They aren't clicking approve on 400 mundane tasks anymore. They transition to what the framework calls HONL, human on the loop.
Yes. Notice the preposition there. They are on the loop. They're sitting above it, not trapped in it. In this structure, humans act as conductors in a control tower. Because the ACP automatically halts malicious or erroneous actions, what Van Linde classifies as malified situations, the human only has to deal with genuine, complex exceptions.
I see.
They are managing the bona fide edge cases that require actual human reasoning, rather than acting as a tired bouncer for routine traffic.
It really is a brilliant inversion. You build the deterministic fortress first, and then you orchestrate from above.
Right.
But building an impenetrable internal fortress kind of creates a false sense of security, doesn't it?
How do you mean?
Well, because the moment your agentic AI needs to interact with the outside world, you know, the moment it queries an external database or connects to a cloud provider, all of those internal shields are basically bypassed. Your company exists in a massive, constantly shifting global ecosystem.
Yeah, that's very true. And that reality requires us to look outward, which is the final component of Venlinda's strategy. He deeply examines the concept of multi-vendor swarms and the critical issue of digital sovereignty. A massive trap that organizations fall into is the pursuit of the singular God model.
That God model.
Yeah, they look for one massive AI platform from a single vendor to just run their entire operation.
Which is an understandable instinct to simplify procurement,
sure.
But it's functionally terrible. It's like if you hire a single genius and clone them 1,000 times to run your company, you haven't really built a robust workforce. You've just scaled their specific blind spots across the entire enterprise. A resilient system requires a diverse array of specialized talents.
Exactly. The future does not belong to monolithic models. It belongs to orchestration. You need model diversity to mitigate hallucinations and operational bottlenecks. The text highlights a practical swarm architecture. So you might route complex, multi-step logical reasoning to a model like Mistral.
Okay.
Then you might use LF Alpha for highly specific, regulated domain knowledge. And for heavy, repetitive bulk data extraction, you route the work to specialized open source models.
But orchestrating a multi-vendor swarm means your proprietary corporate data is constantly moving. It is crossing borders. It's pinging different APIs. And it's sitting on servers owned by massive foreign conglomerates.
Yeah.
And the source material highlights very specific legal mechanisms that make this a massive threat, particularly for European companies.
This is where digital sovereignty becomes a matter of survival, honestly. If you are a European entity routing data through American tech infrastructure, you are subject to extraterritorial jurisdiction. The text specifically warns about the U.S. Cloud Act and FISA 702.
Just to clarify the mechanics of those for a moment for those who might not know, FISA 702 and the Cloud Act essentially give U.S. intelligence and law enforcement agencies the legal authority to compel American tech companies to hand over data stored on their servers.
Right.
Regardless of where in the world that server is physically located, and often regardless of whether the data belongs to a foreign citizen or company.
Exactly. If your data touches their infrastructure, it is legally compromised from a sovereignty perspective. You just cannot rely on vendor promises. The technological solution Venlinda outlines is the implementation of on-the-fly anonymization gateways.
Okay, so how does an anonymization gateway actually function in real time?
It basically sits between your internal network and the external AI swarm. So before a query ever leaves your secure cloud environment, the gateway intercepts it. It identifies personally identifiable information, intellectual property, or sensitive financial data, and it physically strips or encrypts it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so the external AI model receives the underlying logic of the prompt, processes it, and sends the answer back. The gateway then reconstitutes the answer with your internal data. Your sensitive information never actually touches the foreign server.
So you essentially scramble the payload mid-flight and reassemble it when it returns.
Precisely.
But legal frameworks aren't the only external threat. As you are building a highly efficient AI swarm to run your business, malicious actors are building highly efficient AI swarms to break into your business.
Oh, yeah. The asymmetry of automated attacks is just staggering.
Yeah.
A human security team needs to sleep right.
Right.
An AI-driven cyber attack probes your firewalls 24 hours a day, constantly mutating its approach. To survive that, you really have to fight fire with fire. The framework mandates continuous AI-assisted red teaming.
Meaning you deploy your own aggressive AI agents to constantly attack your own architecture, trying to find the vulnerability before the external swarm does.
Yes, exactly. You combine that automated red teaming with digital profilers that constantly monitor the behavioral patterns of your systems, hardening the architecture dynamically. Security is no longer this static wall. It is a continuously evolving automated immune system.
Wow. We have covered a massive amount of ground here today, just tracking a 20 years of organizational evolution. So to synthesize Venlinda's approach, First, you must kill the agility charade and implement FlowOS to mechanically protect your workforce's cognitive capacity.
Mm-hmm.
Second, you build psychological safety not with posters, but with a cognitive constitution and data trust cards that restore human sovereignty over data.
Great.
Third, you abandon the dangerous illusion of human in the loop. You design deterministic hard-coded ACP shields where the human acts before the loop. And finally, you reject monoculture in favor of a multi-vendor swarm, heavily guarded by anonymization gateways and automated red teaming.
You got it. And when you look at the totality of these frameworks, it brings us right back to our hand sawyers staring at the windmill. Van Linde's ultimate thesis is a profound reframing of technology's role in our lives. AI does not destroy work. It destroys the illusion that the nature of work is static.
Right. And if a leadership team views agentic AI purely as an excuse to cut payroll, well, they will gut the tacit knowledge of their own company and build a machine they cannot control.
They will build an unmanageable time bomb. But if leadership uses AI to elevate their workforce, you know, to turn those exhausted manual hand sawyers into system designers, into control tower conductors, and into the guardians of the organization's ethical boundaries, well, then they are laying the human foundation for a sustainable future. As the manifesto clearly states, human before the loop, always.
It really is a genuinely inspiring vision. I mean, it pulls the narrative away from dystopian replacement and puts agency firmly back into human hands. It provides a real roadmap for elevating human potential.
It does. It really does. But, you know, as we elevate an entire generation of workers from manual task execution to high-level system orchestration, it leaves us staring down a deeply complex structural dilemma.
Oh, what's that?
Well, if agentic AI completely consumes the manual, repetitive bulk work, you know, the digital hand sawing, what happens to the entry-level jobs? Historically, grinding through that basic repetitive work is precisely how a junior employee learns the raw fundamentals of their trade.
Oh, that's a good point.
Yeah, it is the crucible where they build the tacit knowledge they will later rely on to make complex decisions. So if the machines are playing all the basic instruments, how on earth do we teach the next generation of conductors?